Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So, stay with us and together, we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, standing alone. And before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey, the founder of Lucis Trust. Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature, and those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thought is also from Alice Bailey. It is by standing alone that all seekers grow. By feeling their way and discovering their own peculiar line of approach to the center from which light streams out, and also by responding steadily and in realized loneliness to the call of duty and service. The need to stand alone seems a bit contrary to the group consciousness that the books of Alice Bailey emphasize so much. Can you explain this apparent contradiction?
It's an apparent contradiction, but I think as we talk about it, people will understand why there is a need on the spiritual path to stand alone. Everybody new to the path, everyone who is awakening to the spiritual life and trying to develop their spiritual consciousness, seems to want a teacher and a companion. Most of us are like that. We look for someone who's ahead of us, who can teach us and share their wisdom with us. And we look for a friend to walk the way with us. And I suppose that's because the spiritual path is, by its very nature, heading into an unknown realm. We haven't been there yet in consciousness. And I suppose it's only human and natural to want to hold hands with someone. And it's true that the spiritual community is an essential component of the awakening spiritual consciousness, the sense of being one with one's fellow seekers, and eventually one with humanity, and ultimately one with the universe. But at the same time, there's a need to realize that group relationship doesn't mean dependency. It shouldn't mean that. Each of us has to be responsible for ourselves, and particularly for our own spiritual development.
Right. It's kind of an illusion to think that one is. If you're different, if you think differently, then suddenly you're thrust out of the group, and you develop this lonely feeling. You're the only one out there that's thinking this way, and it's not really true. But it's just one of the experiences that one encounters on the path. When you step forth on the path, then you tend to have this feeling of loneliness.
And yet at the same time, you're awakening to the realization of the group that treads the path with you. So it's a fine line, and in a way a conundrum, that you realize how much you share in consciousness with your fellow seekers, and yet at the same time the fact that you must tread the way alone. And this is one of those spiritual paradoxes that I think any true spiritual path reveals, and there's a reason for it. Well, there are a number of reasons for this apparent aloneness, and one of them has to do with a basic truism that's found in the writings of Alice Bailey, which says that the esotericist is one who must stand alone, and that the esoteric path is trod alone, as essentially alone, not in fact, but it appears that way. This is because I think one is thrown back on one's own resources as the soul. If you are constantly under the authority and the guidance and the benign domination of a master or a teacher whom you deeply respect, it's probably likely that you're not going to learn to draw upon your own spiritual resources quite so much. You won't have to, because you would have that teacher, that master, guiding you and pointing the way. But when you have to turn within and try to awaken your own intuition and develop your own common sense, because the path must begin with common sense, and your own sense of reason and your own recollection of past experience and your sensitivity to relationships and to the cues and so on that you are getting from life experience and from your relationships, then you begin to really chart the course for yourself. And this is in keeping with the Buddha's final statement as he was getting ready to die, when he said, "Be a lamp unto your own feet. Look not to anyone outside yourself for help." Not because the world is a cruel and mean place, but because he was saying you have resources within you that you must tap.
And this invokes the soul, the very soul within you, to come forth, and it gives you added strength to stand on your own. And that's the whole purpose, actually, of this kind of testing period that you have to go through, because you can stand alone but not feel lonely. And loneliness comes when there is too much of attention on the self, on the little personal self, and the poor me, that I'm out here by myself and have got these ideas and I'm all alone and nobody loves me. And so that's what you have to let go of. And once you do that, then the higher self, the soul self, begins to take its place, and it gives you added strength.
I think, though, that what you're saying, it's true, but it's also easier for some temperaments and for some souls than for others. We've talked many times about the seven rays that govern the makeup of human beings. And the first ray soul, the soul who is on the line of spiritual power, will, and purpose, is one who quite naturally, by temperament, prefers to stand alone and to draw upon his own resources and to be utterly, completely free of the will and power of and authority of anyone else outside himself. And especially for that soul, he is truly one who stands alone and needs to, and probably most of the time wants to. There are also those souls who are spiritually, we could say, in training for leadership. And the writings of Alice Bailey say that these souls in particular need to learn to stand alone. And they can do so, she says, if they love enough. But one can't be a leader, I suppose, in any realm, certainly not in the spiritual realm, if you don't have the ability to draw upon the resources and the light of your own soul. But there are other souls along other lines of development whose natural inclination is to love, comfort, lift, and serve. And we've talked about the glamours of the path and the glamour of selfish unselfishness and of selfish responsibility can cause these people to think that they have to help everybody, and that if they think they've found even a little portion of the way, they must turn around and lead everybody else along that way, whether or not they want to tread it or not.
Yes, that sense of self-pity, or the over sense of pitying those others around you that haven't yet made the grade or made some step forward, that can be kind of smothering, actually. And it doesn't let them experience the same, go through the same experiences that you are. And so it's another aspect of the path to develop the sense of a detachment. And that comes very strongly in this first ray types that have to be up there in leading the group, but with a detached kind of way.
The writings of Alice Bailey say that all that a seeker has to do in relation to others is to stimulate the light within them, leaving them free to walk in their own light upon the path. And when you think about it, we cherish freedom for ourselves. We demand it. We aspire to it. We cherish it. We protect it with all our might. So must we honor that same need for freedom in others. And yet, the very love that we have for our closest friends and companions and family makes us want to make the way for them easier. But in thinking that, what we're doing is deciding for them the way that they must go, and that violates a fundamental spiritual law. Even though we might be extremely close to our loved ones, we don't know, as the soul knows, what the next step is for another human being. We barely know what our own next step is. How can we judge that for our spouse or our children or our best friends? These are, well, not mysteries, but they are problems to be worked out by the individual himself or herself. And the most service you can do is to stand with them and have confidence in them as souls and allow them to learn and experiment and experience on their own. That takes a lot of trust, but it's also one of the most profound forms of love. Too often, very well-meaning people mistake interference for love.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, Standing Alone. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company. It's the Alice Bailey book, Serving Humanity. Serving Humanity is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. The discount today comes in the form of free shipping and handling. It's available for $16. Serving Humanity is an inspiring compilation of extracts that will help the reader's understanding of true service and why it's so important to spiritual development. What you need to do if you'd like to take advantage of this special offer from Lucis Publishing Company is send a check or a money order, $16, to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005, and also write a little note saying that you heard the offer on Inner Sight. Once again, ask for the book Serving Humanity, $16 in the form of a check or money order, and send it to Lucis, Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. We appreciate your donations, and if you send donations to us, that helps us a lot with allowing us to stay on the air and pay for these radio shows. So we certainly appreciate your support. The donations are tax deductible, and we sincerely hope you continue them because we'd like to continue doing the show. Donations can be sent to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, if you'd like to get in touch with us for any reason, such as ordering books, cassette tapes of radio shows, a general package of information telling you about Lucis Trust, give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. 1-866-695-8247. That's a toll-free number. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Our website is www.lucistrust.org. And also, although there's a lot of information on that website about Lucis Trust, one of the primary reasons people key into it is to listen to the previously archived library of radio shows. that's quite a paradox that we have here, the paradox of group consciousness. And group consciousness, from what I understand of the Alevis Belli teachings, is one of the highest priorities of spiritual development. And you kind of threw me here with the idea of achieving the path through individuality, that you quoted the Buddha, which I thought was interesting, that even though he would place a priority on group consciousness. What was that saying again?
Be a lamp unto your own feet. Look not to anyone outside yourself for help. Maybe you're confusing group consciousness with herd consciousness.
Oh, no, not at all. No, group conscious meaning, to me, from what I've learned from you and from the readings, has a lot to do with identifying with the group and for the good of the group. And
being a useful component within the group would require that each one brings a mind and a sense of responsibility and experience. And all of those things are gained through charting one's own path, don't you think? They can't be given to you.
I think you're right, because as you spoke today, it's the type of thing that just... looking at it, I think that one would have to come to some sort of an epiphany on his own as to the importance of group consciousness and realizing how valuable it is to set forth effort in behalf of the group. Would that be correct?
Yes, you have to awaken to it in your own good time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, freedom has to be allowed. Freedom is such an important part of the spiritual path. We are part of humanity. We are a fragment of the one humanity, but each atom, each human being, has to be allowed to awaken to its own inner divinity. And that comes through giving that individual human being or atom its freedom to chart its way according to the light that is within it. And this is what the Buddha recognized, that each person, no matter how feeble and unprepared they might see, has within them the ability to recognize what is for them their next step. And that next step will not be the same for everyone. That's another important thing to realize about family life and about one's loved ones, that the people that we are closest to might be those with whom we are one in love and one in shared purpose in the way we view life and the goals we've chosen, and yet in their spiritual journey they might be at quite a different place. And this isn't either bad or good, it's just the way it is. And usually I think we shouldn't try to judge where another person is on the path, but just keep in mind that they are most likely at a different place with different resources and different experience. And so when you try to determine for someone that they need to do such and such to progress spiritually, you're on thin ice. I mean, how many of us can even judge that for ourselves? It's hard. You cannot possibly know what your children need to do for their spiritual development, can you? I wouldn't think. All you can do is try to create the circumstances that will enable each child to awaken to his own recognized next step. I think that's what's so marvelous about the Montessori method. She believed that the child, given the right conditions, would awaken to that inner recognition.
And often that awakening to that inner recognition, especially in a family situation, often that will cause a kind of a schism.
Yes.
Within the family.
That's very unspiritual. But, very normal.
it's unfortunate, but if both spouses, for example, of a family can understand what's happening, then they can go along with it and they can tolerate it. But if one spouse is suddenly opposed to the other spouse is breaking away, or even one of the children breaking away in the traditional values or consciousness of that family group, then it can cause friction.
Mm-hmm.
And it often does. We've seen it happen in our experience, and not in our personal experience, but in the
no, we're utterly harmonious.
I've noticed that.
Oh, yes.
But in the experience of our work, you know, with the Arcane School and students and studies, and one spouse will suddenly start these studies, and the other spouse will be violently opposed to them, and it really causes a big division in the family.
So both people in that relationship have to respect the need for spiritual freedom and the need to stand alone in one's spiritual life. It isn't meant to be isolation. It's meant to allow freedom within a relationship, not to break up the relationship, but to leave space within that relationship for the freedom of that soul to chart its way. I mean, we tread the way with our closest loved ones only for a time, and then there is an apparent separation, but not really, we're told. I'm talking about death or whatever. These are fundamental mysteries, and it's very hard to work this all out in consciousness, but I think one of the hardest things might be to be in a relationship with a loved one and to not be able to share that spiritual awakening with them. This takes enormous discretion and sensitivity and reticence and silence and understanding about their own particular unfoldment. It can be a marvelous experience, but not an easy one.
No, and it's the kind of thing that the spouse that is tending to break away in consciousness, and this happens only in consciousness. It's a conscious thing that happens because the soul sensitivity to the soul has become more rarefied and more sensitive, and the person feels a need to follow that soul impulse, and that the danger is here that it can be used as a tool for the tendency is to want to shout it from the housetops. I found this amazing path, and I want to share it with everybody, and why don't you believe it the way I do? And there was a sudden reaction against that. And So silence, as you said, is one of the virtues here that also should be used and cultivated.
Well, yes, the Bible addresses that point when it says, don't cast your pearls before swine. That's a little bit unkind. But I think we can imagine what it means. There's nothing wrong with swine. They are God's creatures, but they probably don't appreciate pearls for their beauty and luster. What it's saying is don't cast that which is most precious to your soul at the feet of others who may not share that recognition of its preciousness. And until you've had the experience of doing just that, you don't realize that something is diminished, something is lost in the whatever it was that was precious to you, whatever spiritual realization you had. If you trot it out and cast it at the feet of someone who doesn't understand it, it will be returned to you diminished and without its luster. Alice Bailey said it a little more nicely, I think. She said certain treasures are too valuable and frail to be exposed to others' sight. Keep them within the locked seclusion of thy heart. If you speak too prematurely, you can diminish a spiritual realization. There's a great need for being silent and for keeping one's own counsel, I guess you could say. I would think here in this great city, New York, where so many people live alone, that the ability to stand alone spiritually would be an attribute that they could cultivate and perhaps appreciate a bit more. I'm sure that there are many people who feel very lonely. But if it's true, as I believe it is, that the ageless wisdom says there is no circumstance that does not offer some gain to the life of the soul, then those who are lonely should look at their circumstances and say, well, I have exactly the right conditions to cultivate my spiritual freedom and my spiritual mastery. Because we don't become masters without mastering ourselves. That's done by drawing on your own resources.
And I think if you look at this question of standing alone from the angle of the soul, not from the angle of your personality, but from the soul, you'll see that the soul is trying to break away, and it's breaking away from the soul's angle. It's breaking away from this prison, this isolated way of living, and it wants to rejoin the group. It wants to rejoin the universe, and this is the way the soul sees it. Sees it just the opposite of what the personality life may see it. So it's kind of an interesting way of turning the question around and looking at from who you really are and where you're going. You're returning to the universe, to the Father's home.
And when we are told, when you complete that journey, you realize that it was completely an illusion to have imagined that you were ever alone. So I think that what we are talking about, standing alone, is a temporary stage in consciousness, not in reality. And that in conscious awareness that you have to figure out spiritual questions and solve spiritual problems on your own, you're drawing upon resources that otherwise wouldn't be activated. There's a beautiful thought from the Ageless Wisdom that I think sums up this apparent conundrum. It says, "I am the one who never stands alone. Those days of isolation lie behind. I stand alone when trial comes, for I am strong and need not drain the strength of others. I stand alone when blame descends, for I am true and know what I should do. I thereby shield the weak and leave them free. But in this work, I am the self which knows itself to be the self in all. And thus I do my work, alone yet not alone, and thus I stand."
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Serving Humanity. Serving Humanity is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. And it's available today for $16, and what you need to do is send a check or money order to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Serving Humanity is an inspiring compilation of extracts that will help the reader's understanding of true service and why it is so important to spiritual development. And you can find a lot of the subject matter from this show in Serving Humanity as well. So send a check or a money order, $16, to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Ask for Serving Humanity. You need to get in contact with us for any other reason, general package of information, finding out more about Lucis Trust, or to get a schedule of our meditation meetings, give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.